Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
He's unpredictable. He's relentless. He's fearless. He's smart. He's a jerk. Oh, man, what a jerk. How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
He's talented.
He's blunt.
He's complicated.
He's the fakest tough guy I know.
He's honest.
A self-proclaimed weenie.
He's angry.
He's actually a good guy.
He's a psycho big-mouth prick.
I wish we had more Kirk Minahans.
How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
Combustible.
Unpredictable.
Venomous.
Testy.
Obnoxious.
Selfish.
Polarizing.
Pompous.
Enough about me. Let's get to the show.
It's Kirk Minahan's Enough About Me.
Curt Schilling is probably the greatest postseason pitcher in the history of baseball. He now works at ESPN, and he's probably as divisive an athlete and personality as we've had in Boston in the last 25 years. He actually, in fact, would have been a natural for my business, Sports Talk Radio, and he almost joined us at EI a couple of years ago. I want to say it was like 2 or 3 years ago. I'm getting ready to do Comcast that night. Television. That's before they fired me. I was getting ready to do Comcast on TV, and I got a text from Rob Bradford, who's a real good friend of mine. You know him well. And he said, I am about to go over to Curt Schilling's house with Jeff Brown, who is formerly a VP here, yep. Probably the most reviled figure in the history of the station, if you ask people. And we're going to make a pitch to Schilling to be the 2-6 host in the afternoon. True or false?
True.
And what happened?
I'm
just going to walk me through that day.
They came over. I was trying to decide what I was going to do. I was negotiating with ESPN at the time. But I wanted to be able to talk to people and converse about other stuff.
Right.
Wasn't an option at ESPN. And so they came over and made a pitch. And then when we started to talk about the financials, they're like, here's what we can offer. And I'm like, okay, this is probably the end of the conversation.
It was a bad offer?
It wasn't even remotely in the ballpark.
What were you expecting? That's the thing is you came from ESPN. You came from playing baseball. It's a different world, right?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It is. But I also know there's a reason everybody in this this business is very secretive about salaries.
That's true.
And there's a reason. Because yes. There are three guys in the studio. One guy's making $2.6 million. The other guy's making $250,000.
Correct.
And they don't know it.
Right.
But that's what the hierarchy does, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. I've gone through negotiation processes. I just went through one fairly recently, and you don't know what other people are making.
Yep.
You have no
idea. And
then
they are explicit. Hey, don't tell anybody.
Right.
Or they put it in the contract.
It's what kind of questions are you asking in there? Were you saying how much does Jerry make?
I was saying
Holly make.
They made an offer, and I kind of did a – it was almost like Larry Lucchino's first offer to me in 2003. And I laughed, and I go, all right, let me just see another one.
Right.
That one. They're like, well, that's kind of our ceiling. I said, that's not even anywhere near my floor.
Do you think you could do that? You just came in with us for an hour. We're taping this on, let's say Thursday? On the Thursday, whatever it is, 10:30, you just came in with us for an hour, and it was fun. We had a good time. Do you think you could do that every day for 4 hours, 5 days a week, 46 weeks a year?
And what do you mean by that?
Do what Jerry does, what Holly does.
Yeah, I could. And I don't say that dismissively like it's easy. I could do it, though, because I don't have a second gear. Any topic that I'm talking about or that I'm passionate about, and I'm going to take a side. And I like being told I'm wrong by smart people. I like – because I always feel like you get into a smart conversation with a smart person, and if you're wrong, you get smarter by listening. But I like this. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy making people understand that – you know, other than throwing a ball really hard, very precisely, there's not a whole lot different for me than anybody else.
Did you think at the time, I mean, was that a negotiation thing? Or if they'd given you the money they wanted, you wanted, what, am I going to say 3 years ago? Does that sound about right?
It was? Right before my ESPN deal, yeah.
Would you have taken it if they gave you the money you wanted?
Oh, yeah.
And you would have done this, and it would have been, what, with Holly?
I don't know. It would have been 2-6, and I can't remember. I think Glenn was here.
No, Glenn was gone. This was during the Salk thing. This is when they were getting
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you wouldn't have worked with him, obviously, but you would have worked with Holly.
Yeah, I think for a little bit.
Yeah. Would you want to do it now? Today?
I don't know.
What's your current contractual situation?
Have you been fired yet? No, I'm with ESPN
through
2017.
All right. So
as of now.
Right.
I love talking baseball. I feel like of all the things that I talk about, the one thing I think I feel like I know better than anybody on the planet is pitching. And it's something I'm comfortable talking about, something I can talk to the depth and detail that very few people can. And I think I can do it in a way that educates people that don't know the sport that well.
But, you know, and you did it with us today and you did it on Kansas City Radio last week. I get the sense, though, that you want to do more. Just talking baseball.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say bores you, but there's times where you say, you know what, I want to do more. Well, being at ESPN, obviously, it's not going to allow you that opportunity.
No, the thing about ESPN that's so attractive is the people I work with are some of the greatest people in the world.
Right.
I love the athletes I work with. I love the hosts I work with. I love because they asked me to do the one thing I think I know how to do. But being at where I am in life and realizing what I believe to be where we are as a nation, I think we've gotten where we've gotten in a lot of ways because of people that are afraid to speak. I think standing by idly and watching things happen has led to this. And I've never been one to stand idly by, and I have opinions. And it's amazing to me the amount of people that think, it's just stick to baseball. You're a jock. I mean, like, playing baseball disavows me from an intelligent conversation, apparently, to a lot of people.
Right. So, disqualifies you from that. Yeah, I can understand why you would think then. There's no doubt that there is that crowd that does it. But I do think that when you do these things, you know you're going to set some people off. I mean, I think you take some satisfaction from that. I know I do.
No, but and I don't know how to say this any other way. I don't understand why my opinion has become such a big deal to people. You know, I mean,
because you're a high profile guy.
But I'm saying, you know,
why did you endorse McCain?
Because he was a dear friend and somebody I trusted.
But did you think that your endorsement might help people? You didn't think it would
sway
one vote?
Yes.
So it's the same thing.
Right. No.
So
I know, but I'm saying
when it helps your cause.
But maybe it's naive in a sense. But you know, this last incident in Kansas City with Rex Hudler, former teammate of mine, that was an hour show.
Right.
And I thought we had a blast. We talked about baseball. We talked about old times. We talked about being teammates and stories. And there was about 3 minutes in the end that was a discussion around, you know, Trump and Clinton and politics, and I didn't think anything of I don't.
But who else at ESPN is going to answer that question?
But
like
here's
that?
The thing, though, Kirk. These people are all yelling, you know, you're an idiot. What the hell do you know? Yet they still listen to me and get pissed about the things I say.
Of course. Well, don't you read stuff that pisses you off?
No.
You
no,
don't?
That's what I'm
not saying comments from people.
No.
You won't read a story from somebody, let's just say from a liberal side, and get worked up about
no.
it. No. You don't?
No.
That's kind of closed-minded.
No,
it's
not.
I know, but
it's the same story just thrown up all over again.
Like, you didn't read the Boston Magazine 38 Studios thing?
I did.
Or some of the stuff I wrote?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And the thing was, there was a lot of stuff that was hurtful for me in there.
Right.
But you know, the stuff that was true, there's nothing I can do about it. And I've always said that. If you talk bad about me or you write something bad about me and it's something I've done or said, okay.
Right.
That's on me.
Right.
But a lot of people don't do that anymore. Well, you know, the meme on Twitter.
Right.
And then, you know, this last week, I thought initially the meme on Twitter that got thrown around, people left the only word that mattered in the entire tweet out.
Radical.
Extremist.
No, I'm sorry, extremist. Right, right, right.
Because there is no story if you include that word.
Correct.
Just like you leaving out if she did this or if she's found guilty.
Right.
There is no story if you include
but
that.
But here's where I would say, I would look at the difference between the two. I thought the thing with ISIS was bullshit.
Yeah.
Totally bullshit. And I thought you were going to get fired. Did you think you were going to get fired?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you were done. And I thought I was getting ready to go
scorched
earth. It would have been totally absurd. The Hillary thing, though, I do think you're right that they changed the headlines, and I've been the victim of that too. But I think you do believe that she's guilty, though.
Yes.
So I mean, you think? So I mean, we're kind of
right, but that's my opinion.
Right. And I know that. But
opinions are like what assholes.
Correct. You can.
Everybody has one, and they stink.
True.
You know. I mean that. So people ask me my opinion, and I answer.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's become a very polarizing thing.
Right.
I don't give my opinion. It's my opinion.
Right. But like, why? So for the ISIS, let's just say back to the ISIS thing. Like we were, I remember Jerry and I and John during the break saying he's fucked, and we thought it was totally nuts.
Well,
he's dead. He's cooked. So they suspend you for the rest of the year. They take you off of Sunday night baseball. But but why would they put you on Monday night baseball? Why didn't they just leave you on Sunday night baseball? Well, why were you moved?
They because they wanted to have Jessica on Sunday night baseball.
Why can't you do Monday night baseball? Sunday night baseball is considered a higher profile one. Yep. It doesn't matter, right? I mean, did your pay change?
No.
So you're on Monday night baseball instead of Sunday night baseball. Right. Was everybody okay with it?
Well, here's the thing. I think that...
Who was pissed about it?
People above me.
Nobody that you... Everyone you worked with was cool?
There are some people of Muslim descent and that I work with, that I'm friends with...
Right.
...who I had discussions with because I couldn't understand or comprehend how anybody could look at that and think it was a racist statement.
Right.
Although, if you need to delete a word to read it, then yeah, it does become one.
Sure.
But there were some people that I was very close with, who I spoke with, and they were like, yeah, you know, initially I was kind of bothered. I was like, wait a minute, what?
Right.
How could you be bothered by this?
Right.
I realized then, though, that and it's always been this way my whole career, people ask me a question, and I don't have a yes-no answer.
Right.
I've never had one, for better or worse. My wife hates it. Because it's never, she's like, you know, I don't need you to fix this problem. Just listen to me.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, I start having convulsions.
Right.
If I can't, like, answer and fix it. So.
Do you think you'll eventually get fired by ESPN?
I hope not. I mean.
But do you think this is.
I hope not. I don't know.
Because the PC police have never been stronger.
Right.
Twitter has changed, I think, a lot of it.
Yeah.
Now
there's no.
When I saw Deadspin yesterday, I thought, shit, here it goes. The snowball is rolling downhill. And you can't.
Honest to God. Somebody from ESPN called me and said, what the fuck?
Right.
And I was like, what are you talking about? They're like, dude, what the hell did you say? I'm like, okay, again, what are you talking about? I didn't even, and that's, again, maybe I'm naive.
So you hung up the phone with Rex and you were done. You didn't think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, that much, you know,
right.
3 minutes of a 60-minute show. And then when I saw the headline, I'm like, oh, come on. Seriously, that's worth a headline? That, I mean, with all the stuff that's going on. The same people that are telling me, you know, you're an idiot, shut the hell up,
right,
continue to listen and complain.
Right. Right.
Like, I don't listen to people I don't like.
But you know, but here, two things. Number one, I'll just, again, I can only do it from my side. I did the thing with Aaron Andrews a couple of years ago. Got a lot of trouble for it. Deserved to. It was stupid. I shouldn't have said that. I was a moron. At the time, Boston.com would have their top five most read stories. They probably still have it. I remember one time looking at it, and all five were about me.
Yeah.
People love shit like this. People love writing. When you get in trouble, you're one of these guys, people will click on it. If there's some story about you and memorabilia, Nazi memorabilia, people are going to click on it. You know, I mean, that story.
That was another one. A lady from Boston Globe called me about
Hillary Sargent,
my World War II collection.
Right.
She called it a Nazi memorabilia. I said, hold on a second.
Right.
It's a World War II collection. I have stuff from every nationality. You know, every country that fought in the war, you know, it's a fascinating thing. I think it's something very important that we should never allow a generation to forget.
But then it turns into Kurt Schilling's Nazi memorabilia story.
No, I get it. Yeah.
And then it's identified, and you can sit here and we can say this, and you're right, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
It's over. You can't
put it in
context.
Which is why I don't get worked up about stuff beyond that, because I can't.
Well, you would go on these crazy Facebook posts and 38 WordPress. I mean, you would get worked up about stuff,
right? But I put it in a format either on my Facebook page, which is private,
right?
You have to befriend me, and or I put it on my blog where you have to go look,
right?
And you have to want to, and I don't. That's the thing. I don't do that. I don't seek out people I disagree with, and hey, I don't seek out content that they create,
right?
It's a waste of my time,
right?
And so, you know, I don't understand people that do that. To the extent that people are doing it.
Well, I do it sometimes. Yeah, I enjoy the confrontation.
It doesn't. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I'm not criticizing.
No,
what I'm
okay.
saying is, I don't get the allure.
What is your take now? You're removed. I don't know. How many years ago did the 38 Studios close? Five?
It seems like decades 50? Ago. Yeah.
My take at the time, and you can tell me why I'm wrong, we can argue about it, was it was hard for me to reconcile Kurt Schilling, who is, you know, anti-government, wants less and less government in his life, which you say is true, right?
I want a smaller government.
You want a smaller government?
Right.
So do I. I'm a registered libertarian.
Right.
And then you go and you take money from Rhode Island. The company fails. The company fails.
Right.
Then you leave, you know, you leave the taxpayers holding the back.
Right. Well, first of all, that's all bullshit.
Okay. Well, okay. But you took the deal, right?
The state came to me.
Right.
And said they wanted to create jobs in Rhode Island.
Okay. This is Chafee.
Right? No.
Not at the time. No, I'm sorry.
Cartieri.
Right.
And the EDC.
Right.
They wanted to create a job. They had a jobs program that they were going to potentially, they could create legislation.
You're a Maynard at the time?
Yeah.
Right.
They could create legislation that would give us money and, excuse me, that would help them grow their knowledge district is what they called it.
Okay.
I was probably about $25 million in at that point.
Yes.
I still had not found an outside investor. And I was going from the perspective of the more skin I have in the game, the more attractive this is going to become to an investor because, you know, the whole too much to fail kind of thing. And then I realized, you know, if the state buys in, this is never going to fail because the state's not going to let it fail, number one. And number two, the state's backing the company, so a VC's going to be comfortable doing that well.
But let me stop you real quick.
So the state issued a bond.
Okay.
An investment bond.
Right.
Which there are billions of them out there. It's an investment
tool. But when you start saying, well, the state's not going to let this fail. The government's not going to let this, but they fail all the time.
No, I know.
But that I think is in direct contrast with your philosophy usually, wouldn't you say?
Well, no, hold on. But
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, yes and no.
Okay.
I understand, but I disagree
in the
sense that they offered an investment tool. They didn't give us money.
Correct.
They offered a moral obligation
right.
to repay the bond if the company went bankrupt.
Right.
Right.
So then the state would repay the bond.
If they chose to.
Correct.
They weren't obligated. They were morally obligating.
So then you
but
are,
you don't.
But you are, in fact, then putting faith in the government.
Right.
Right.
No. I'm putting faith in us. I didn't think.
Well,
right.
you were not correct. You were not operating under the assumption of failure.
Right.
You didn't think it was going
to
fail. At that point, you thought this was going to be a slam dunk?
And everything. Well, because they were going to give us $75 million.
The state was.
The bond was going to give us $75
million. But where's the bond coming from?
From the investors that bought it.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Go ahead.
Insurance, whatever.
Yeah.
So we're getting $75
million. Okay.
Well, 48 hours before the deal is done, we find out it's $49.
Right.
And we had been operating under the assumption it was a completely different amount the whole time.
So what are you thinking then?
Now we have to make up $25, $26 million.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking one of two things. Either I'm going to have to go more in or we're going to have to find somebody else to finish. We knew we'd always have to raise money to do it. But I ended up putting close to $50 million of my own money into this company. And there's another $49 from the state. So close to $100 million that went directly into the Rhode Island economy. I didn't take I never made a penny from the company. I was down $50 million.
Right.
But I took a shot. If Rhode Island doesn't come, and here's another thing. I know Massachusetts disavowed the whole thing. Well, we're not going to do it. We're glad we didn't. They never offered and we never asked.
Right.
We never asked Deval Patrick for anything.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to the speaker about programs, you know, for entrepreneurs, but we didn't ask for a hand. We never asked anybody here for anything. And they try to walk away like, oh, you know, we did the right thing walking out, and then we never asked them. But if Rhode Island hasn't come to us, the business closes in Maynard.
But the citizens of Rhode Island were hit with basically about $112 million, right?
It's
out of their pocket.
I don't know what the number is.
Right.
All in.
Well, let's just say is that reasonable?
It's oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I know you spent $50 million your own money, but my point is if you don't, and this is how I thought of it, if you don't go into business with the state of Rhode Island, the citizens aren't left holding the bag.
Absolutely.
Right.
If Rhode Island doesn't come and make the offer, we don't go there.
True, but did you ever look at it and say, well, if this and this happens, we're going to screw over the taxpayers of Rhode Island?
No, because you don't. I think that's part of the athletic mindset.
Right.
I'm not playing the game thinking about what if I lose.
But did you surround yourself with people that were thinking like that?
Well, yes. Contrary to popular belief, we had a lot of really smart, we had an unbelievable team. Everybody knew the ramifications, but that was so far because again, we're building budgets and operating under the assumption that we're getting $75 million, which takes us to the end. We don't have to raise money anymore.
Right.
So we don't have to spend time and resources running around the world trying to get investors. We focus on the product and we get the product done.
And you were broke when it was done.
No. Me personally?
Yeah.
No.
You were not. No. Because there was those reports.
The thing about it was people want to argue about the fact that it was a loan. It wasn't a loan. Okay, there's nothing about it.
This is where we get into. This is
right.
where the debate. I guess
right. It's
the,
a bond.
The crux of
it's
it.
A bond. A bond is not a loan. A bond is an investment tool. Okay, I took out loans in the last probably 6 to 12 months for the company and signed my name to them. I'm still paying those back.
Right.
I was advised to just file Chapter 11, get rid of it all, and get rid of the debt. And my comeback was, I put my name on these documents. I gave these people my word. And so that's how I never signed. I don't know how much, if any, I'm not absolving myself. I'm the number one reason the company failed. Mm-hmm. My failure to raise money, outside money, is, and Rhode Island taxpayers have every right to be pissed because they've never, ever been given close to the story about what happened. And with all the bullshit litigation still going on, I'm going to sit down when this is over with somebody down there on a radio station and take calls until they're done.
Well, we're on in Providence. We're number one in Providence.
Yeah, but I mean, I will do that just because, first of all, they all deserve it. My employees deserve it. The way it ended was so opposite of the way it ran.
But the citizen, we can debate whether it's you, whether it's government, whether it's both, whether it's neither. They got fucked.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they got left.
Absolutely. They got screwed.
And your thing is that you just never thought there was a possibility because you were too competitive. That's not going to be a great spin for them.
I'm not talking about a spin.
But if you go on there and say, well, I've never thought of a failing because that's the way I was.
When we made the deal, we didn't have whether we were going to be a success was based around the game.
Right.
Because we were finishing the game with the money they were giving us. Again, within less than a week before the deal is done, they sit down and tell us, okay, here's what's happening. We're keeping $26 million for, you know, payments if something fails and yada, yada, yada. And we're like, well, no, that's not the deal. That's not what we did.
Right.
Well, it was too late. We were already in the process of moving. We couldn't, like, stop the deal.
So how long were you in Rhode Island?
About a year.
About a year, that was it?
Yeah.
And then it was over?
Yep.
Would you ever go into that world again? Business like that again? Or are you done? You try once?
No, I failed, wouldn't. There's so much pain there for me.
Yeah.
That'll be one I take to my grave, because I had built, the object was to build some, and that's the thing, what we were building was going to be, and was at the time, so vastly different than anything else that existed from a company perspective. We had 4% turnover in an industry where the norm is 60 to 70, because it sounds like Michael Scott in The Office, but it was a very family oriented thing. And that's why the end was so unbelievably painful, because I hurt people that I deeply cared about, and I was as emotionally invested as I was financially. But then when you realize that, you know, the second runner-up to this was Lincoln Chafee and the administration, now it's starting to come out that they did everything in their power to make sure this went the way it went.
But you turned down you were given a subpoena that didn't go, right? Was this recently?
No, I haven't been given anything.
You have no subpoena yet? Nothing? So you'll go, you'll testify, you'll answer any questions they ask you, right?
I haven't been served one.
Yeah. So when I wrote a column about that, I started with a quote that you had. This is February 2011. I think there can be no question that falls on us, the individuals, to find a way out of our own personal crisis. That's you talking about economics.
Right.
Would you at least acknowledge that that's a little inconsistent with what you did after that? Do you understand why?
Well, absolutely. No.
But I think when you're a big voice, and you are, and you were back then, the actions I think have to.
I don't have
that.
A problem with that. Absolutely don't have. I didn't take a loan.
Right.
I didn't. You know that I can't. I don't know how else to explain that. That's not a loan.
Was there a point where your wife or other people, friends, family said, "Listen, you're spending $50 fucking million dollars here."
I went through.
I mean, think of the years you pitched, all the shit you went
through. A lot of that. Every time I put more money in.
When did it feel like? When did you start saying, "This is a complete fucking waste of my time"? Like I am spending.
When it failed.
Not during the process? You
no,
think I'm
no,
burning
God.
Money here?
We weren't. But with, that was
3 months
payroll.
Ago? I understand. But when you said, we're not going to win here. We're not going to come back
from this. No, because it went from, and this is one of the hard things to explain. It went from Thursday, you know, we're making payroll on Friday, to Friday, oh my God, we might not make payroll. Because we were working with the tax credits in Rhode Island, and the governor got involved.
Right.
And said, we're not going to give them to you. And that, first of all, he has no say in that anyway.
Right.
But I was like, okay, hold on. And then over the next 24 hours, things happened that realized that they were motivating and pushing this to go off the cliff. And then that's when I was like, oh my God, this is actually going to go under. And it was probably a low point in my life. I mean, you know, there was a 72 to 96 hour window where I was just... I couldn't believe it.
Right.
I couldn't believe. And it wasn't the money. I mean, obviously, you know, when you look at it, it ends up being the money at the end. But it was, we had built something that was very, I think the people there would tell you, I mean, I'm sure some of them, and some of them have said that were upset, but there was 300 people in this company, and they worked almost 2 weeks without pay. And very few, if any of them, ever came out and said, MF me.
Right.
Because we did have something, but the way it ended was tragic.
It's fine, though. I'll tweet something out about you or about evolving you. We talk about you on the radio, and you can see the difference in opinion, whether it comes from a 781 number or, I guess it's 401, right?
Yep.
Is that what it is? It's you know, not all of them, but most of them.
But again, I understand
are, you know, screw him.
But they were left
him
in the dark.
Right.
That one of the regrets.
But why don't you? I mean, you can't do that right now.
I can't because the state.
Talking about it.
No, but I'm saying the details of
the specifics.
Right. There's still litigation. I read.
It would bother me.
It bothers me immensely. But I read almost 10,000 pages of depositions, and I read my name less than 10 times, but I'm still on the lawsuit because this keeps it on the front page.
Right.
And it's been a political football in Rhode Island. It's been passed all over the place and been used for, I heard before this hell happened, you know, Rhode Island is the most corrupt, this, that. And I just thought people were being facetious and funny.
So you didn't even, look into that before you,
I wouldn't think a state government would be.
Well, if you're going to make a deal with them, shouldn't you do a little legwork?
Right. But where was the downside to making this deal?
Well, but I mean, there should be some natural cynicism.
Well,
you didn't look at it and say, do I trust the four or five people you got to deal with? Do I trust this person?
Right.
You didn't talk to people
And again, naive. Gordon,
that's what I'm saying.
I thought Gordon Fox was the most honest guy I ever met.
But shouldn't.
Now he's in the pen.
But isn't that your job to ask around and find out about this guy before you go
absolutely
into business?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And right. I got lied to, I was on the personal side of the deal, talking to people and meeting people. I had a CEO and all these other people that were running the business, which is what I hired them to do. And I feel like I'll tell you where we made the mistake in the deal. When I look back on it, the mistake that we made was we didn't want the state involved in product development because that was just a no-win for anybody. So we gave them the oversight to how we would spend the money. They basically dictated the more jobs we created, the more money we got. Well, we tied the money to creating jobs, so we never got to use the money for product development.
Why would you give them that? Because you had to give them something?
They wanted something, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and they didn't want equity, and we didn't want to give them equity. We didn't want to be, you know, so we had IBM hey, they're going to come in and check us, and they're going to tell the state, update. And they were, the state was intimately aware of every single thing that happened, and now they're claiming, oh my God, it snuck up on us, and they, you know. But yeah, I'll take that to my grave.
Do you, talk about lack of trust, I guess, do you understand why most Red Sox fans, despite the three World Series, don't trust John Henry?
Oh, yes.
Yes, you do understand that.
Yeah.
How was he, what is your current relationship with the Red Sox?
None.
No relationship at all. You don't talk to Henry. Why not?
There's a lot of reasons why the way it ended was.
Well, give me a couple.
Well, my final year in 2008 when I was hurt and they refused to allow me to have surgery because I went to have surgery in spring training and then come back. I signed with the Red Sox in 2008 for, I think it was $8.5 million.
I think that's right.
I turned down a 2-year deal from two other clubs because this is where I wanted to finish. Mm-hmm. And I felt like 07 was great. And then I realized about 2 months after when we were on vacation. And I was throwing with my oldest son down in Puerto Rico, and my shoulder started bothering me. So I immediately called Theo. I said, you know what? Something doesn't feel right. I came back, and I went and saw the guy who's been taking care of me since 1995, Dr. Craig Morgan, who ends up now he's been working with the Royals for the last 5 years.
Right.
He diagnoses me with basically a rotting bicep tendon. And he says, you know, there's a surgery. It's kind of out there. We can do it, though. You'll be ready in 6 months. And the Red Sox were like, no. No, you can't.
When you say the Red Sox, who is that?
The team, medical team.
Okay.
And the ownership.
So
and
why
Theo.
Would, so Theo said, how's your relationship with Theo right now?
I've always had a good relationship with Theo, even through the disagreement.
Why would they say no?
Because they, I don't know other than they thought if I had the surgery, I couldn't pitch the whole year.
Right.
My doctor's telling them, listen, he'll be ready by the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm. Is that the year you came back and you came out of the bullpen?
No, that was before.
That was when 05. The A-Rod thing and the...
That was 05.
05, right. Right.
So I did this. I said, okay, I'm gonna overdo this in the sense that they want me... They're trying to punish me. You have to work out every morning before the guys show up. So I did. I showed up every morning at 5:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I went at my rehab like an animal. And we got into the season and I was... every couple of days I'd play a little catch, and it was getting better, but I still felt like everything was, it was still wrong. And I went down and threw a bullpen, and I think we were in Cincinnati, and about and first couple of throws, I was like, wow, this is good. And then it fell off the rails. And I knew that. I said, this is not going to work. I can't do this. So we went in and we had the surgery. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Morgan fixed me. And literally what we told them in spring training to the day, I'll never forget this. I threw my first bullpen like 4 months to the day after I had the surgery. And I had life in my arm. Everything felt good. And that was the day I retired.
Yeah, it was the end of 08, right?
Yeah. It was the day I retired because I realized I didn't want to do this anymore. And a lot of things happened that year on a very personal level that that I'll never get past.
This is with Henry?
Henry and Tom Werner.
Well, what was said?
Well, they thought I was lying to them about the injury.
Right.
When I signed the contract. They thought I knew I was hurt.
They said that to you.
Yeah.
Henry and Werner.
Yeah.
And what was your response to that?
Well, we had meetings.
Were they trying to get their money back?
Yeah. And it got very personal.
Were they ever threatening to sue?
No.
They would just go through. How would that work if they were going to try?
Well,
and
they weren't going to. They brought in the Major League Baseball, and we brought in the Players Association. I brought in my attorney, and it was just I was devastated, because everything I had done to be on the field, and they're up in the ivory tower, and they're trying to pass judgment on. And I think eventually what it was I don't think they really cared anymore about me because they knew I was almost done, and this was the spring training. When I was as a player rep, I negotiated the Japan trip in 2008 from a player's perspective. We got all the coaching staff completely paid, and this was like double their salary. So this was a huge deal to them.
Right.
And I found out the last day of spring training, the coaches weren't being paid. So I went to Tito and I called Theo down. I said, "Listen, I just found out the coaches are not being paid. We're not going to take the field until this is fixed." And I remember Theo like smirking a little bit, like he knew what was going to happen.
This was going to become a Larry issue, or
this was going to become a top level to player issue. And
so, who handles that up top?
So he runs away, and players have already agreed to this, and people are like, "Fuck!" And
you're not getting on the plane.
We're not going to the field.
Right.
We're not going to play the game.
Right.
And so the coaches are like,
"You're already in Japan."
No, we're in Fort Myers,
right? Right.
And we're getting on the plane to go to Japan,
right? So you're saying
we're not going. So the coaches are like, literally almost in tears, appreciative of the fact that we're doing this.
Right.
So
what were they going to give them? Meal money, or
they were just going to give them meal? They weren't going to give
per diem.
Just per diem.
Right.
And which was it was a fucking shame.
Right.
So, and I'm hurt at the time. So I'm sitting in my locker, and Larry comes down and starts the lecture. "You guys can't do this. This is fucking bullshit. You have to go out in the field." And I said, "Larry, we negotiated a deal." In front of the whole team, he turns on and goes, "You're a fucking liar." And starts screaming at me. I'm like, okay, you can yell all you want, but I'm not.
Was this the first time you had that kind of conversation with Aquino?
Yeah. I've known Larry since 1988.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, okay, this is getting real now.
Right.
So he got mad, and he figured he was going to scream at us, and the meeting ended, and I said, okay, we're still not going on the field. So it ended up getting rectified at the end.
You
the coaches got
there.
Paid.
Right.
And then they tried to keep me back off the trip.
Oh, did you want to go on the trip?
I did want to go on the
trip.
Really? Well, I had two purposes. Number one, because I was rehabbing. Number two, from a business perspective, I was going to be able to have meetings in Japan with potential investors overseas. So it was going to be perfect.
Right.
So at the last minute, one of the weasels in the organization comes over and he's like, "Yeah, I don't want you to go on the trip." And I'm like, "I don't give a shit."
Who's that?
He was one of the medical staff
here.
And he's like, "Yeah, I don't want you to go, blah, blah, blah." And
you knew
like,
he was full of shit.
Right.
Right.
And I'm like, "Fuck it, I'm going."
Right.
He's like, no. And I said, "Teal, listen, they're fucking around." And I ended up going. And there is just, I knew then it was going to die a fiery death, this whole relationship.
So like today, when did you get in the Hall of Fame, the Red Sox Hall of Fame?
Two years ago, yeah.
Whatever it was. So when that happens and you get in there and you see Henry at these events or Werner, Lucchino, is it cordial at all?
No.
No conversation. That must upset you a little bit.
No.
I mean, given what you did for them. I mean, listen, all the checks cleared from your end, too, and they paid you.
I didn't do it for them. I did it for the guys.
But I understand.
Right.
But they've won World Series. They've made money off it. And you're part of it, and as were 5 million other guys. So you walk in there. If Henry were to walk in here right now, you just wouldn't talk to each other.
We wouldn't. No, he would have nothing to say.
Did you ever have a relationship with him anyway?
I thought I had a very close relationship with all three.
Really?
Absolutely.
And then it was just like that?
Yeah. That was that meeting we had. When we got together with player rep, and they said things in that meeting that made me realize that they never gave a shit about me.
What did they say?
They called me a liar.
Right.
They thought that I was lying to get my contract.
Right. But that's different. What makes you think then that they never gave it? Because they might have legitimately you were lying.
The things that I did from an
injury perspective.
From an injury perspective,
right.
I did for the teammates in the organization.
Well, I mean, it is, you know, obviously, we both know, you've told me off the air that was painted, that there wasn't real blood in Yankee Stadium. but I mean, you're kind of, if anything, we can disagree on a million things. If anything, I don't think the one thing that you can't be criticized for is pitching through pain.
Right.
I mean, you could say whatever you want about you. You're bombastic. You're an asshole. Yeah, that's the one thing that I don't think.
Right, but
think that Henry and Werner and Lucchino would have to say, we have to give him this. If he's complaining about this, there must be at least some truth.
Yeah,
to it.
They didn't believe me, and the challenge for me was, in a sense, I'm an idealist. A man is only as good as his word, and so the thought that they might think I was lying was like bowled me over.
Right,
because I was taking pain meds. All through this time, from 04 till I retired, whatever I needed, whenever I needed it. Excuse me. And sure. I knew why, because I wanted to pitch, and they wanted me to pitch.
Right.
Well, when I was done, they were done.
Yeah, but they're not like – do you think they're not going to be like that with Ortiz?
No.
They're not like that with Pedro. They're not like that with Varitek. No. I mean, I was just down there last week. I see it all the time.
Yep.
Why is it different with you?
I don't know.
Well, you must have a theory.
No, I mean –
is it political?
Think about it. I don't know.
John Henry, listen, he's spent the last year in the Boston Globe trying to make sure Zarniev stays alive.
Right.
To make sure that the Olympics come to Boston.
Well, you remember 04, right? I mean,
yes,
you think about Vote Bush and the fact that they went nuts about it and told me they wanted me to be quiet. And then they put John Kerry on his private jet and flew around the country.
And Theo campaigned.
And they were pissed at me for exercising my First Amendment rights.
Now, would you ever have that dialogue with them? Would you ever say to them, what the fuck? Why are you doing this when I'm doing this?
I can't.
No?
I don't know. I'm too old. Why? I don't care.
I don't know. Because these things, I would want to talk. Yeah, if my bosses were doing that, I'd say, what the fuck?
Again, I keep going back to the fact that people I know and that know me, they know who I am.
But didn't you think Henry was one of those guys?
I realized he wasn't.
Werner was one of those guys?
You can say things to people that make, you know what? It's like if I told you that, listen, I am the nicest person you're ever going to meet, and we're walking down the street, and I kick the dog.
Right.
You'd be like, okay, what a fuck. Yeah. I can't be nice people.
Right. I hate
there are things you do and say that you can't cover up. They reveal who you are. They've done and said things.
Is there a part of you, though, that, and listen, you're busy, you're working, you're doing 5 million things, but is there a part of you that says, geez, I'd kind of like to be looked at as part of the Red Sox organization? Do you not care?
Yes and no, but the same thing today motivates me as it did then. The guys I played with and the fans. I've watched them run Tim Thomas out of town.
Right.
And after Brady supported Trump, the stuff that happened, politics is a very big deal here. And it doesn't matter. It's what have you done for me lately in a lot of ways. And that's okay. I get that.
How would you characterize your company's work on Deflategate in the last 14 months? ESPN.
Well, the confusing part for me was when it became obvious that the whole thing was started from a lie from somebody in the NFL, how it didn't just end there.
Right.
I thought it was very simple in that sense that, okay, Chris had gotten a false message, report, whatever, from somebody in the NFL, and that it became public that was false.
But he never corrected it.
No. And I don't know why. There's a worldwide bias against this organization. I mean, if that's not obvious to everybody... And I keep going back to the thing I believe. This country hates sustained success. 2001, did anybody even know the Patriots? They didn't fuck.
No, I didn't care. No, in 2004, you guys were the darlings of the country.
Right.
Right.
But then, after we won, and Boston people became Boston people.
Correct.
Everybody fucking hated them.
Right.
The New England Patriots have done something that we've never seen before and probably will never see again in the NFL.
Let me ask you, real quick, what I find curious, though, is at the same time, and I understand the scope of the sports aren't the same, at the same time, you are seeing another organization with a head coach who's kind of prickly and one star the whole time have almost the exact same run of success, maybe more, in the Spurs. Nobody really hates him. I wonder why that is. Maybe it's just because the NBA is not as important as the NFL.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons is because of the market. Like, I mean,
yeah, I guess.
You know,
I guess.
But it, no, it's absolutely because you look at what Boston draws.
Right.
And you look at the last 15 years have been almost unrealistic here.
It's crazy.
Right? In a good way for us, in a bad way for everybody else.
Right. This year is a disappointment for Patriots fans. They won and 12 games and went to the AFC title game.
We think like that now here.
I grew up here. Believe me, it's crazy.
Right. But but I think there's some. I think some people here were assholes about it after.
But I also think the other owners in the league thought that Goodell and Kraft were boys, and the Spygate thing. They think Goodell didn't do enough, and that I think is the biggest overarching reason why. And I think 27, 28 owners in the league right now say we want to bury these guys. Yeah. We don't even care if it's true or not. We just want to bury them. And ESPN, I think your company, I think led the charge and really hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why.
I can't speak to. I don't know. I have no idea why.
Well, you watch it.
Yeah, but I don't really pay. I'm a Steeler fan, so
right.
I hear it, but I don't go into the football room and ask the guys, hey, what do you think? Because I was on a station talking about what a joke it was that Deflategate didn't end and everybody didn't apologize there, because it was clear to me that Tom was saying, I'm not taking a deal. I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
So fuck it. If you guys, you can do whatever you want. I'm going to the hilt saying, and when I said something, Chris Carter was like, oh, wait a minute. No, dude, you can't. You don't know the whole truth. I knew the truth. It was fabricated by somebody in the NFL. I think the 15-year reign of the Patriots destroys the parity argument for the NFL.
Well, but the problem is nobody else can do it, though.
No, I know.
I mean, there's only one Brady. There's only one Belichick. You're never going to see it again, ever. That's not going to happen.
I keep going. Why haven't more people tried to emulate the formula?
Well, you got to get Tom Brady.
Okay, but there's a lot of good quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right. But I mean, the Packers, look at the Packers last.
Right.
They've had a really good run. I mean, if you have a good quarterback, generally you'll have a pretty good.
But why not imitate the system? In baseball, you see it all the time, right?
But what's the system? What is it?
I can
explain.
It's exploiting the slot receiver very much, right?
Right. Part of it. But I can explain what the Royals are doing, kind of. I can explain what the Spurs are doing, kind of.
Yeah, but see.
But Belichick is different. Brady's different.
Okay. So what would you say the scouting report is on LeGarrette Blount before he got hurt?
Before
is he a number one back?
No.
Okay. Corey Dillon when he came here.
He ran for 1,600 yards.
Right. Antoine Smith and the.
Yeah, they went through a million of them.
This system makes studs out of players that aren't.
Right, but I would say to you, I'm trying to think of a guy, Mark Bulger. He was a good quarterback, right? Average, above average quarterback. If he was the Patriots, if they picked him in 2000, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Nope. Wouldn't matter.
No, it always starts and ends with the quarterback.
Right, and Brady's the best ever at it.
Yeah, but baseball, everybody's trying to build a bullpen now because the Royals have shown.
Because the Royals, yeah.
Yeah, and that's trendy.
Right.
And in football, it's always on the defensive side. You see the Bears doing what they did in the 80s and the 90s and stuff. No one's done what the Patriots have done in 15 years. Every single year, they went 11-5 without Brady.
Right.
I mean,
they were 16-0 the year before.
Right.
But yeah.
But they went 11-5 without him.
Correct.
And doesn't that scream system?
Sure, to some extent, yes.
Right. And so all the teams spy on everybody else.
Well, they hire all these guys, though. So, I mean, they hire McDaniels. They hire Romeo. They hire White. They try. It just doesn't
work.
They can't do it.
They can't
Pioli,
do it.
Even when they hire front office guys,
well,
they
but
can't
I,
do it.
I laugh about the guys that leave out of here that are Belichick disciples.
And fail.
They try to do.
Right.
The other stuff, they don't just fail. They suck.
Right.
And that's mind-boggling to me.
What do you think you'll be doing in 5 years? Do you want to do this ESPN stuff for 10 years?
I like talking. Again, I love the guys I work with. I absolutely look forward to being
there. So you're doing Monday night this year?
Monday night, and I'm doing baseball tonight.
How many days
tonight?
A week are you going to be in the...
I don't know.
Do you drive and drive back?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
So what time do you get home?
Depending if I do a midnight.
Do you actually drive? Or you get a car?
No, I do. They have a driver.
So you don't stay up there ever?
No.
The weather's shitty.
You know what? No, it's not even that. I spent my whole life in a hotel. The last thing I want to do is sleep in a fucking hotel.
Right.
So I come back and trying to give Shonda some breathing room after, you know, she got the kids off to school for my entire life. But I love the people I work with. Carl Ravitch is one of my favorite people in the world. Eduardo Perez and stuff like that. But
does it ever get, not boring, but you can't get as crazy doing that as even what we just did or what you just did in there? Is that part of your brain?
Yeah.
Ever
yeah. Oh,
need
absolutely.
To be, need to be...
I think it's one of the things that makes me...
slot angles and velocity.
I think the thing people complain about is also the thing that makes me good at what I do. I'm not going to say bad things about people. I'm going to criticize when you don't give effort or when I think you made a mistake. But I'm not. It's not a personal thing.
Right.
I criticize without making it personal. There are a lot of people. You know, you look at like a guy like Michael Felger. I mean, he's in, you know, everything he does is to create callers and viewers, and. Yeah,
That's what I do. I mean, that's part of my job,
yeah,
too.
But I don't think off the air you're any different than you are on.
No, that's true.
And I think he's a fraud.
What about Shaughnessy?
Same thing. I think there's two faces to him. You know, I've always seen him as a very bitter man. And given, you know, the things that have happened in his life with his family and health, I would assume he would be like me. I've been blessed.
Right.
Unbelievably blessed. And I always tell people, if I was 18 and you told me to write my life, I wouldn't have written one-tenth of what I've gotten.
Right.
And I'm happy for it. I look at other people like that. He should be happy.
I had Shaughnessy on the podcast last week down at Fort Myers. He told me that he doesn't hate anybody in the world. I mean,
I don't either.
Yeah, but do you believe that in his case?
I don't know.
You don't hate anybody?
I don't know. Because nobody. I think hate takes too much energy.
But I know it's a natural reaction, though.
A lot. No, but we used to. It's almost like, I think we overuse the word hate like we overuse the word great. Oh, he's a great quarterback.
Right.
Great quarterback. No, he's not a great quarterback. He's good.
Right.
You know, and I hate somebody. It's a 17-year-old response to somebody that pisses you off. As you get older, I don't have the energy to hate
people. What about the shitwad that was screwing around with your daughter last year on Facebook?
No.
You don't hate that guy?
I don't think about him. I don't give him enough thought to hate him. The one that I got labeled a sex offender, tough shit. The one that I got fired, good for him. It's his fault. I despise one... Above all else, lack of accountability. That's the one that makes my skin crawl.
And this is where we'll get into. I would just say there are going to be people listening to this podcast in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
You hear you say that, and they're going to say, wait a minute. What the fuck is he talking
about?
Well,
but I've been very clear. I'm the number one reason the company failed.
That's true.
I didn't take out a loan.
Right.
Every loan I took out and put my name to, I'm in the process of paying back.
Right.
This is an investment tool used in every country, in every city that has a capitalist market.
Do you read Shaughnessy? Do you read papers? Do you
read? No, I don't read, Dan.
Do you read? But you have to read stuff for your job. What do you read?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I read Keith Law for prospects.
Yeah.
I don't read. I'm not going to read something about pitching in baseball that's going to help me get better.
Well, no, but you must read stuff just to keep up.
Yeah, no. Well, hockey's my big thing.
Right. Now you're
into that. I'm obsessed with hockey. Trying to get texting Barry Melrose every day I can. You know, why are they making this trade?
Right.
But you know, I'm compulsive and when I get onto something, I don't do things halfway. You know, I'm all in, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why my wife gets pissed at me.
How's your health?
Good. It's been an interesting 2 years since the radiation and the chemo, and that I still have barely any saliva in my mouth.
Right.
So the winter times are a nightmare for me. I wake up at night, I have dry mouth, and you can hear it in my voice right now.
Yeah, you sound all right. I remember when you came in.
Yeah.
When did you come in with us? That was the day we did the ice bucket thing at your house, and you looked like hell.
I had no idea. I look back at pictures now, and I'm like, because I went to the Red Sox.
How much weight have you put on since then?
About 50.
Yeah. You were pale.
But I went to the Red Sox thing. And I remember looking around the room. The guys were all like, fucking looking at me. And a couple months later, I ran into most of them. They're like, I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
I swear I said the same thing to Jerry. We walked out of there in the little cul-de-sac around here, whatever is right. I said, this poor bastard is going to be dead.
Yeah.
Did you think that? Or were you just so?
No, you know what? I had a talk with my wife. I'm in a really good place with my faith. We talked at length. I said, listen, one of two things is going to happen here. I'm going to live or I'm going to die. Now, I'm not being dramatic. I don't want to die because I love my kids. I want to see my kids get married. I want to meet my grandkids.
Of course,
all that. But if God thinks that that's the path for me, I'm okay.
Do you really? I am
100%.
See, this is another thing that you and I are. I'm envious of people like this. I have no faith. Which sucks. I wish I had.
Well, I've experienced it in my life.
Right.
2004.
Right.
There are times that things happen that can't be answered any other way.
What do you mean? The baseball?
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. You think you won the World Series?
No. No, see, that's a mistake. I never prayed in that setting to win the game, ever.
So what are you saying?
I prayed to be able to compete.
Oh, because you're physical.
I couldn't compete game one.
Right.
So my prayer was just let me compete, and I'll let the chips fall after that.
Right.
And it happened. And I had Gabe Kapler, one of my favorite people of all time. Gabe is Jewish, and he's kind of an atheist by nature, but
right.
Incredibly intellectual guy. And he and I had some great conversations. After the World Series, when we were flying back, he comes up to me on the plane. He says, hey, I'm leaving in a week. And I'm like, okay. He goes, but I need to have lunch one of these days. And I'm like, all right. He goes, because I don't know how to explain what I just watched.
Meaning
what I went through.
Meaning game six?
No, when I went, the World Series,
the
everything.
The whole thing, yeah.
And because he was in the locker room when I walked in for game two, and I couldn't walk.
Right.
And we had a great talk about it. But I've experienced true faith. I did not go to sleep. I slept when I could sleep soundly. And I don't want to die. Right. Nobody wants to.
Right.
I want to, but.
I mean, you weren't.
I lost my dad when I was 21.
Right.
And it was a sudden thing, and I was alone with him when it happened.
Right.
And the pain and agony of that obviously eases over the years. But I realized two things. One, I've learned more from him since the day he died than I did when he's alive. But two, I stopped needing to be in the room with him to talk to him.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty cool.
Sure.
And he came into my life a lot of different times. I've had that peace in the hospital. And I can't explain to you other than to say I know what it feels like to have faith, true faith, and not be scared.
I understand that, but you've got great kids, and there must have been a part of you said, yep. Jesus Christ, you know, I'm not going to see them again. They're not going to see me again.
I don't believe
they're going to have kids.
Well, if you live, yeah,
even in your ideal world, that's still different than getting to see them and getting to wake up with them, having breakfast with them, and going.
The thought
on
of the pain
them.
That I would be inflicting on them by dying.
But that's not right.
But I'm saying all the things you think about as a parent.
What do you think happened? So let's say, and I'm glad that you're healthy. Let's say it didn't work out and you died from this cancer. Where do you go?
Heaven.
Your body, your spirit leaves your body and floats up to the sky.
I don't know where it goes.
I
don't have an answer. I'm not.
What is heaven?
We're not supposed.
Heaven is not the studio.
I'm totally comfortable in the fact that I don't know. I think we've gotten to a place, and I know we've gotten to a place for a lot of people where it is, if I can't prove it, it can't happen. You know, faith is the belief in things sight unseen.
Correct.
Right? And so if Jesus showed himself to you in this room right now, it would take no faith to believe in him, right?
If Jesus Christ came in here?
Right.
Yes.
If I said, God, please turn this water into wine, and it turned into wine in front of you, it would take no faith for you to believe
it. I would then believe it.
That's why faith is so hard.
But you spend your whole life as a cynic. And I'm cynical. You spend your whole life as a cynic.
That's okay.
But then I can't just say, when I die, boy, then I guess I'm going somewhere else.
No,
I mean, that's,
the Bible is a personal relationship with God.
When did you start believing this?
I had always kind of believed in God. I gave my life over to God when I was 27.
What does that mean?
I was driving home
from
a game in 1997.
97.
Year of my life.
You're in Philly.
Right.
That's a
year
great
of my life.
Right.
And I'm driving home, and I just read a book about the rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going through my head, and this thought came to my head was, what is this all for? What's the end game? Am I living this life working with people that have ALS and being able to do all these other different things? To what end? To what mean? It's got to have purpose, right? I mean, this can't be random.
But why? Why can't it be random?
Because nothing we do, if you think about good and evil, why do they exist? If everything happened by chance,
right,
then there would be no logical path to everything. Let me ask you something.
Well, then why do 2-year-old kids get cancer and die?
I think.
I mean, why if there's a God, why was there the Holocaust? Why was there 9/11?
Okay, so listen, those are all easy to answer, right?
They are?
It's very easy to answer. It's like the lady holding the baby in Africa that has died of thirst.
Right.
Right? A real God wouldn't do this. Mankind has the answer for every single thing you just said. Everything that's been done, man was given free will.
So God is hands off.
God, we have free will. I could pull out a gun and shoot you right now. I have free will,
you
right?
You actually could.
Yeah. But I'm saying, we make those choices. We can feed and clothe and home every person on the planet.
So why doesn't God put...
No. We could.
Well, who created us?
Well, there's a creator.
So God creates us and he leaves us alone.
I think there's influence. I think we are
why
given...
Does God let, why does God help you get through a game in Yankee Stadium but let some 2-year-old die of thirst?
Again, I don't... He doesn't let the two... We do. That's on us.
But
we could. We
I
could,
agree.
Right?
I agree.
We choose not to.
Yeah, but if God was this big caring figure, wouldn't he get in the way? Wouldn't
well,
he be a little
if,
more hands-on?
If you believe the Bible and you believe that heaven is far better than what we have,
right?
then he's doing it. He's taking them out of a horrible place.
Yeah, but why can't he just give them some water, make them better, and then live a life, and then bring them to the better place?
But why don't we do that?
I don't disagree. I would like to do that as much as I can.
We sit around and look and blame everybody for everything, not realizing we have the ability to answer. Do you honestly think that if we had put the trillions of dollars that we spend on Wall Street to the cure for cancer, that it would be done?
That we would cure cancer? I don't know that.
Right, but I'm saying.
I mean, I would like to see
it. Right, but where are our priorities? Our priorities, and I'm not saying you. I'm saying we. Me,
right.
I'm included.
Right.
Right? Because the thing that I found out that totally blew me away, becoming a Christian is the opposite of what people that don't like Christians say it is. They think it's a holier than thou, you know, you're perfect. I'm a deeply flawed human being.
Right.
I'm not okay with that, but that's the way it is.
Do you think if you didn't have your religion, you would have died?
No.
Because you read these studies.
No.
Because I have, you know, right. recently I've had more of the stuff going on in my family. You read these studies that if people believe, if they have faith, that it actually helps them. Do you think it helped you during the process?
I think it's an individual thing. I think the Bible is your individual relationship. I'm done listening to other people tell me what the Bible means, what God means to people. The Bible is your own little one-on-one.
Do you go to one of these churches where like the Joel Osteen types are walking around and screaming and ranting and raving? No?
And if somebody finds comfort and peace there, that's cool.
Well, I'm just wondering. What's
no,
your...
no, I'm a, it's a normal
Do you
church.
Go every week?
No.
You don't?
No. No. It's a personal journey for everybody, and it's one of the most amazing things. And what do you think about? There's so many things to think about, like NASA, they can send a spaceship from here 1,000 light years away.
Right.
Right? How do they do that?
How do they do it?
Right.
Well, they get a lot of smart people in a room and figure it out.
Hold on a second. There's billions of planets, stars, and asteroids in the galaxy, right?
Mm-hmm.
How can they know where those things – they have to know where they're going to be at any given time to make this work.
What is your point?
The point is everything is perfect.
Right.
The way it should be. It's not – there's no accidents. The argument for intelligent design is mind-boggling. When you look at down to the cellular level, is it easier to believe that Jesus was the Son of God or that a mosquito, an elephant, a giraffe, a mouse, a bat, a hummingbird,
well, it's not quite that simplistic, but I know what you're saying.
Came from the same cell.
I know what you're saying,
right,
yes.
Right. What's easier to believe for you?
I have trouble with both.
Right.
That's the thing. I mean,
you're supposed to have trouble with believing Jesus was the Son of God. My big thing is, do you believe a man named Jesus lived?
Yes.
Okay. So you believe a Jewish man named Jesus lived. Do you believe that, do you believe that he was a brilliantly wise
man? Do I think
he
walked on water?
Right, right.
No, I don't.
I'm saying if you believe he lived,
right.
What part of the Bible do you believe the apostles begin to lie?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Right.
It's a good question. Here's the thing for me. Right.
I trust that intelligent people, after a conversation, won't walk away going, they'll go, well, you know what, that's.
I think both. I understand both sides.
Yeah.
Why the gun? Why the gun?
What do you mean why?
That's like Sean Connery. So he says that Kevin Costner and the Untouchables. Why the gun?
I'm exercising my Second Amendment rights.
Right, but do you feel like this is a place we need to use?
Well,
why are you going to use it?
No, God, no. I don't. Hopefully, I'll never have to use it.
How often you go? Do you go to a range a lot?
Yes.
Do you find it? Is it like soothing to you?
No.
No.
No. I want to make sure that if I ever have to use it, I don't kill somebody.
When did you start packing?
A long time ago.
Really?
A couple years ago.
Would you bring it with you when you were playing with the Red Sox on the plane?
No.
You can't do that?
No. You could. I didn't.
You didn't?
We had armed security anyway.
Yeah. You're always packing now? You distrustful?
27 people in Aurora, Colorado went to see Batman. The police officer walking down the street in Paris.
Right.
None of these people woke up thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die today. The kids Sandy Hook, that went to school, the kids in Columbine. Nobody. 402 school shootings since Columbine, 98,117 public schools. You know how people say one in a million chance, right? It's actually one in 217 that your school would be one of the public shootings, not one in a million. So if I gave you a million M&Ms and I put one with arsenic in it and put it in a bowl, would you let your kid reach in there?
One in a million?
Yeah.
Would I let my kid reach in there?
Yeah.
Actually, I probably wouldn't, but I know what you're saying.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Now, if I give you 217?
Right.
Right.
No.
Right. So I would rather never, ever, I would rather have it and never, ever need it than need it and not have it. And ultimately, I have two jobs as a father, to protect and to provide for my family. The world is a different place now. You look at those people in San Bernardino. They were working with these people for a lengthy period of time. The people dropped their baby off at the grandma's, went to work and shot everybody.
Going on a killing spree.
You don't know, and we don't know, where, when, and how it is.
You have just identified, basically encapsulated, why people are voting for Trump in a weird way. That voice, that fear, that anger is why I think people are rallying around Trump.
I don't walk around afraid. I don't walk around.
But you understand what I'm saying.
Right, no, I'm saying I've come to realize that the world that we live in now is a very different world than the one I grew up in. Now, I can not like it. I can be mad at it. But I still live in a country that sends its men and women around the world to help other people. Now, you can argue about the conflicts and military and war and all those things you want to do. But the fact of the matter is, nobody else is burying their soldiers on our soil. Now, that doesn't make it okay. That's a tragic thing. And you know, the thing that burned me about McCain a couple years back was people called him a warmonger. And if you talked, I've been to the Middle East a couple times, mm-hmm. on tours in Afghanistan and all over. The people that serve and that fight are the most anti-war people on the planet. They've seen it. They know what it is.
Right.
But they also know that a lot of times war becomes the only option when politics fail. I don't trust we're safe here anymore. And when you start having police officers say, I'd much rather you have a gun in your hand than 911 on the phone. You know, I come from a family that served. And my dad was a sheriff. My brother-in-law was a police officer. I'm not going to be in this movie theater and my family's life in jeopardy and not be able to do something about it.
How close are you to running for Senate, running for that seat?
You know what? I got a call from the Republican Party. I was contemplating it, but my family gave their entire life away for baseball.
Right.
I miss so much. And I would argue, I don't do anything if I don't try and plan on being the best in the world at it. If I was going to run for office, that's a 24/7, 365 job. No days off. My issue would be my first press conference, I'd probably get impeached because I'd fire everybody.
Right.
I don't care who you are. It's not working. The amount of waste. I look at this state, for example.
Do you think you would have beat Coakley?
Oh, yeah. I think I would have kicked her ass. Absolutely, yeah. When you look, I drive around the state. How many tolls do you drive through here?
Oh, I mean, yeah, forget it.
Think of the hundreds of billions of dollars, the lotteries.
Right.
Why is this state the way it is? Why would we have one person homeless in this state?
It's a good question.
I mean, the amount of money this state is bringing in from a budget perspective is mind-boggling. But how are we? I love Charlie Baker's a very dear friend of mine, and I was so excited when he won because I know he's a good man and I trust him. I don't agree with everything,
right?
But I trust him, and that's ultimately.
You would have beat Coakley, I think, but I think the same thing would have happened to you that happened to Brown. You would have lost 6 years later because Massachusetts just wasn't going to reelect you. That's not the way the state works.
Yeah, I don't know.
A liberal, Elizabeth Warren, would have run against you.
Oh, my God.
Massachusetts, this is the world we live in. They like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton is going to win this state, again, whether it's against Trump or Rubio or Cruz or whomever, by 35 points.
No.
It's just the way it is.
No. 40,000 people switched.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's the thing that I
like. That is crazy.
But that's...
So you're going to come over at some point, you'll be tweeting and writing on, and you'll be supporting Trump. That's going to happen in 2 or 3 months.
Well, I don't... Yeah.
If he's the nominee?
If he's the nominee, I would imagine that would be where I would support. But I got to reiterate this. People understand this, I think. There's absolute... Everybody's absolute.
Right.
I've never agreed with everything any candidate ever. Ever.
No, of course not.
But people are looking for that.
Well, you're never going to get that.
You're never going to get that.
Never.
I'll never forget this. The Bush family is very, very dear friends of ours, and mm-hmm. they're some of the greatest human beings I've ever known. I was on Air Force One, in the Oval Office in Air Force One, flying to Ohio. And one of the things that bothered me about Bush Jr.
43, yeah.
was his stance on stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of work we'd done with ALS, knowing full well. So I sat down and I said, listen, I need to ask you a couple questions about this. This is something close to my heart. I'm very, very bothered by this. And he said, listen, as a Christian, I don't believe you take a life to save a life. He said, when somebody in the scientific world can prove to me that taking stem cells can be done without ending a life, I'll go.
Right.
I didn't agree with it, but I respected the answer. And that ultimately for me is what I want. I want to be able to trust somebody when the door's closed.
That is the key, I think, that answer in the way he was, and I disagree with a million things he did.
Yep.
But that's why he beat Kerry, and that's why he beat Gore. You knew where he stood, whether you agree with it, whether you disagree with it, whether he was a fool, you knew what was going on.
Yep.
These guys were always chasing the pandering. They were always trying to do that.
Yep.
And that's, again,
well, that's what's happening.
That's Trump's appeal.
But that's why people are so disgusted now.
Of course.
Is that Donald is saying everything that everybody else wants to say, or they want their politicians to say. And I keep going back to the same thing. The Republicans are going to get him elected. Trying not to.
Right.
I wouldn't identify with this Republican Party now for any money in the world. I certainly don't identify with the Democratic Party. But both of these parties are trying to create a system to get their person in instead of creating a system that gets us the best president.
Right.
And that bothers me. And I think that bothers everybody else.
So what is the next 2 or 3 months look like for you? Monday Night Baseball?
Yeah. Are you going
out of Florida?
Have you been down? The plan right now is, I don't know if you ever watched John Gruden's quarterback camp.
Sure.
I'm trying to set up, we're going to do that with some pitchers in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully a Verlander, DeGrom, Harvey, John Lester, David Price.
Right.
Where we'll go into a room, whiteboard video, and just talk.
Right.
And I'm going to ask them, questions about home plate.
You got to wake Lester up a little bit.
Yeah.
You got a little bit.
He's such good people.
I know, but he's...
Yeah. He's a lefty. Lefties are...
Well, Bill Lee was a lefty.
Right, exactly.
But Lester's kind of boring.
Right,
though.
No, but lefties are different.
Right.
You hear that when you're a kid. It's true.
Yeah.
They're freaky.
Right. It's a weird existence. So you didn't do that?
Yeah, and I'm going to do that, and I'm supposed to do Monday Night Baseball with Eduardo Perez.
Yep.
And then Dave Fleming and Carl Ravitch are going to be switching off the play-by-play.
Do the play-by-play?
Yeah.
And you think Jessica Mendoza's doing a good job?
I love Jess to death. And the whole situation puts me in a very awkward place.
Is she a better analyst than you?
No. I don't think anybody is when it comes to pitching. I think John Smoltz is outstanding. But I don't think there's anybody that can come close to analyzing that part of the game.
Do you look at it as a demotion?
No.
You don't?
No. I actually travel less.
Right.
So, I'm sad. Like, I wanted to work with Aaron Boone badly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he and I would make a great team.
Did you like Dan Shulman?
Yeah. Even though he's Canadian,
yeah.
And a socialist.
But, right.
No, it was fun. We had fun. I can have fun with anybody.
Right.
Because, that's my team. And I take that very seriously. I don't care. We can disagree all you want, but you're my team. You're my family. I'm the circle of the wagons.
Right.
I worked the College World Series with Jess.
Mm-hmm.
She's a phenomenal lady. Obviously one of the greatest softball players to ever play. I want to see her do well for her. I don't care that she's a woman. That means nothing to me. If you're good at your job, I don't care who you sleep with, what color you are, what sex you are. I don't care. If you take pride in what you do and you're good at it, good.
So that's it. Another year at ESPN, Monday Night Baseball, a couple of days a week.
Yeah, baseball tonight with Ravitch and the guys.
And you'll be checking in with us every once in a while?
If I'm allowed to. All right, mate. Yeah.
That's true.
We'll see how the next week goes.
All right, Kurt. Thanks.
That was fun, man. Thank you.
All right, thanks for listening to Enough About Me. If you want to hear more great podcasts like this one we just had with Kurt Schilling, you can go to WEEI.com. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to the WEEI app. And then you can go and you can write a review or a rating about it as well. That's going to help us out. It's going to help you out. You'll get more and more of this podcast, Enough About Me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.